Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Well, I come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee. Welcome to Political Persuasions and Alabama version. This is our fifth show, Chris, or is it our tenth?
It's our third show. I mean, does it feel like that much to you? You're like, this guy's been hanging around forever.
It is our third show. Mike O'Mara with Chris Freites. This is Political Persuasions, and this is the week we talked about. This is the news story we talked about. We, as you said before the show, we teed it up for our listeners last week. The Alabama Senate race, which was between Judge Roy Moore and Judge Roy Jones. That's the two guys.
Doug Jones. Also not a judge, a prosecutor. Prosecuted the Klan. But
Senator-elect Doug Jones.
Doug Jones versus Roy Moore.
Yeah, I understand.
That's why I'm here.
I watched 15 hours of this. I know it's Doug Jones. I know he's the senator-elect from the great state of Alabama.
You're still drunk and giddy. Like, you're just, you know, you're sleep-deprived. You're just like, you're the happiest man I've seen.
I watch these election results like a sporting event. And, in a land long ago, far, far away, suddenly this Alabama Senate race took on biblical proportions. Judge Roy Moore.
It really did.
And the fact is that it was incredible. Early in the evening, I was watching this. This was so similar to all the election coverage I've watched recently. You never really know what's going to shake loose.
Let's be clear. They're just vamping till enough returns come in to be able to call the thing. I mean, that is what you're watching. You're watching people trying to talk about a race that they don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And that's it, man. So, it's not like a sporting event where there's an actual game being played. The game is already being played, and they're just trying to tally the score.
Well, I'm going to give a compliment to your people, your former colleagues over there at CNN. I'm going to say this. I'm going to say that these folks, they did a heck of a job, and they called it earlier than anybody else, and they seem to have their statistics right. Well, I popped over to NBC, and NBC was calling him the apparent winner, and I thought that was a little wimpy. That was a little gutless the way they did that. But the fact is, Roy Moore, as we tape this show, still has not conceded that he has lost the election, right?
He's trying to talk about challenging and getting a recount and yada, yada, yada. But the fact of the matter here is Doug Jones is going to be the next senator from Alabama. And having watched that election nerve center work, what they're doing, just to take you behind the scenes a little bit here.
Okay, I'd love to go behind the scenes.
Is they are calling county clerk's offices all over Alabama. And they're getting in the returns, and they're starting to see how much of the returns are in, how much margin is left. And as soon as you have somebody who is winning by enough with enough of the returns in to say there's no earthly way that even if all the rest of the returns came in the opponent's favor, could they win? That's when you can project a winner. And that is hugely dangerous. You're looking at polling. You're looking at 20 years of data. You're looking at election results over the decades. It is like a information triage happening all night with people who are really smart about data and analytics, and making that call is so high profile. Because remember, if you screw it up vis-a-vis 2000, it's a Dewey beats Truman situation. So
let me ask you a question about this polling situation, because I was talking to you before we started taping the show, Chris, about the fact that when I'm watching the coverage, all of the exit polling results that they could talk about prior to polls closing were indicative of a Roy Moore victory, at least the way I interpreted it. Now, that might be my Irish, New England, fatalistic, glass half empty processing of this, but I was watching this, and it seemed to me that they were, in particular, the mentioning of the late breaking vote was going to Judge Roy Moore. And there were several other statistics that they were citing with exit polling that indicated to me that we were going to potentially have a large Roy Moore victory. Now, as the evening progressed, that went in a different direction. But I found the exit polling data that was emanating from this triage that you talk about to be a little confusing in this particular night of coverage when they were talking about that. So I just wonder, are we Do we overpoll? Because they've gotten it wrong an awful lot with the recent elections. Do they overpoll in this situation?
So there's a couple of things, right? You have the exit polling that we start to see come around 5 o'clock. And what exit polling is many years ago, a consortium of news organizations said, we're going to take pollsters out to the polls and ask people as they leave the voting booth, who did you vote for? Why did you vote for them? We're going to ask you a bunch of questions. That has always been something that the news organizations use to inform their coverage, but they don't release those exit polls. And so we typically don't talk about the exit polls because there's a feeling that you don't want to throw the race. You know, we start getting those exit polls around 5 o'clock. The polls are open till about 8 o'clock. And so you're not always talking about those exit polling. Once you see the polls close and you start getting John King up there with his magic wall.
I love John King. You know, I love watching his magic wand. I like that. I enjoy that. I know. I love seeing the counties that, I was watching. Let me tell you how closely I'm watching this stuff. Okay. I'm watching John King say, here's a red county. Here's a red county. Here's a red county.
Yes.
100% in, 100% in. Yep. And I look over at my wife and I say, and that means they got all the votes counted. They got all the votes counted. And that means there's no way that he can get any more votes. Meanwhile, in Jefferson County, Alabama, there was only 62% of the vote coming in, which indicated that's a blue county, which means there are more votes out there for Doug Jones. And suddenly I began to get a little excited with my margarita.
No, I see that. And that's why you play the game, right? I mean, I remember, I tuned in a little bit, a lot less than I used to. You know, I used to dream about George Foreman's grill because the commercial repeated so often on CNN. And I don't anymore. But watching John and Wolf talk and Wolf saying, well, is there a chance for Doug Jones? And what John was saying was he was pulling the votes from 2012. He was saying, well, this is an off year election, special election, so it's going to be tough. And when you looked at the early margins in those low population counties that went hugely red, Roy Moore had a good margin in those places, and we didn't have Jefferson County in. We didn't have Mobile in, and Wolf was saying, well, look, what if Mobile comes in? He says, well, that's why Jones still has a chance right now. It's not looking great for, and if you go back and look at the last election, you could, he broke down the state. Here it's breaking down the same way. It's looking more like right? And then the returns started to come in, and that's where you get the turnout, and that's where you start to see the difference that the millions of dollars that Democrats dumped into this race made a difference, because they had a huge turnout operation, went door to door. It's called GOTV, Get Out the Vote, and they did that particularly among African American communities. That's why Charles Barkley was out there saying, "I love Alabama."
We cannot be that stupid. And he did a fantastic interview on that CNN that place that you used to hang out a lot. I will tell you that the thing that was special about this, and I really want to take my left-wing Democratic hat off right now and
can you even do that?
Maybe not. I was pretty excited. Okay. I was high-fiving. I was excited. The fact is that a Republican senator...
I see you doing like the truffle shuffle, like as like John King is like...
I was happy. I'm happy today. I'm happy about the situation. I'm happy because I think this guy, not only the... you can even take out the fact that he stalked women in malls. Take that out of the equation, and let's just talk about all the misogyny and all the anti-Muslim sentiment. The guy said a lot of inflammatory stuff. He was not an ideal candidate. And because of these allegations and because of the constant drumbeat of hatred that was coming out of this campaign, when Senator Jeff Flake from the great state of Arizona on election night texted or tweeted "decency wins," I believe that with all my soul. And that's why I felt so good. Mm-hmm. I also felt good because it had been a long time since my team, even with Virginia was fun and New Jersey was fun, but it wasn't Alabama fun. Alabama fun. I didn't think we had a chance.
Alabama slammer.
I did not think we had a chance to win. I didn't think there was a snowball's chance in hell that Roy Moore was not going to win. I pictured a guy going into these halls going, I don't care. There are plenty of women that get married at 14. It doesn't matter to me one little bit. I was really, really, I thought that he would win big. And I think a lot of people a lot of pundits like yourself probably thought he was going to win. What did you think? Did you think he was going to win?
I didn't think he was going to win big, but I thought he was going to win. I absolutely thought he could pull this out. And I will tell you, that's a better story for us to be talking about. Had Roy Moore won, what does the ethics investigation look like? Do Republicans expel him? What happens next? That story would have been fascinating to talk about. Now we have Doug Jones, and it's not...
It would have put me into a depression, though, Chris. It would have be, thrown
we,
me
we'd
into
have
a
sad Mike.
Total. It would have been sad Mike. The guy, you know, the guys that I work with regularly on the fabulous Mike O'Mara show would tell you that that I would have been in a week-long depression had that happened. It was... Look... I think there
are
a lot
you
of
already?
People.
Hold on, I just want to have a sidebar because I don't know that our listeners know.
Sidebar. Call the lawyers over.
We're gonna parlay. So I want to know, how has your mood been affected by this vegan diet? Because
all right, here we go. He pays attention.
I listen.
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, if I can answer on this particular sidebar, an honest answer would be my mood, fine. My digestive tract, probably not quite. That's the only way I can look at this. But you know what?
Lots of nuts and berries.
Berries and nuts, and you know, I don't think Judge Roy Moore would be sitting down to a vegan. I believe, you know, he probably has an entire cow in his freezer and is next to his horse. Next to his horse stall that he has down there. The guy just, there was something about this guy.
Well, he didn't
with
campaign.
The cowboy hats. What's the cowboy deal with this dude?
I don't know, man. It's a weird Texas like hangover. I don't know. I didn't understand that. But he didn't campaign.
And I'll slam
like the
left,
year.
Too, because some of the elitist horse women like Mika Brzezinski on MSNBC is like, he did not ride that horse properly. I said the bit was too tightly pulled into the horse's mouth. I think, all right, stop it. Can you advertise the fact that you grew up with privilege? When I was doing my dressage, we would
like,
always gently hold the reins. You know, You know, really, I mean, it's
her and Ann Romney, dressage.
Yeah, I'm hypersensitive to dressage. The elite talking about, but he did look kind of doofy when he was riding that horse to the polling place.
I didn't really understand that, but
it was a fantastic night for a lot of people that really put a lot of significance on this. And I ask you to put your pundit hat on now and the significance.
I never took it off.
The significance of this race to the president, to Donald Trump, who got all in at the end, made the robocalls. Then he, you know, now he's doing the Donnie shuffle where he's kind of backtracking and
being
said,
a little
you know,
magnanimous. I said, what?
I said he couldn't win a general election. That's the latest tweet that he has today.
Oh, yeah.
So where does this, how significant is this victory by Doug Jones in Alabama? For the Trump administration.
Not good, Mike. Not good.
Not good.
Not good. Okay. That's the short answer. The long answer is, look, we're 11 months away. A lot of things can change, but I'm talking to Republicans, particularly those who work for Senate Republicans at some point, and they were like, there's basically crap. This could be bad for us. If you look at how things are setting up, you know, you have a lot of the dynamics that we saw in 2010 starting to play out, where you have one party holding control, trying to pass a hugely controversial piece of legislation, trying to do that quickly without a lot of debate, and starting to lose special elections. That's basically describing 2010 Washington under Democrats and Barack Obama passing healthcare reform, and we know what happened when the Tea Party came to town.
In the midterms, they got waxed.
They got waxed and they lost control. So Republicans are looking at that lesson saying, are we in that same boat? Now, Republicans will say, like, look, the economy's better. You know, we have tax cuts. It's not Obamacare. But I think this is going to be a problem for President Trump when you're at 38%, which is like the worst polling we've seen in a modern president. He is starting to put Republicans in danger.
Will the immediate effect of this victory have anything impactful on the tax bill that's trying to work its way through the House?
No, it won't. And the Democrats are trying to make a little bit of a show of this, because when Ted Kennedy died and there was a special election and Scott Brown won, Harry Reid waited until Scott Brown was seated before they took a final vote on Obamacare.
They won't do this.
Remember, they had a supermajority. They had 60 votes. Kennedy dies, they get 59, throws everything into disarray. McConnell's saying, we're not going to wait. We're going to go forward. It doesn't matter anyway. I mean, this tax bill... If they can get it through, they have a deal where they struck a deal between the House and the Senate. Basically, they bring down the top rate for the wealthiest a little bit, 39 to 37. They jack up the corporate rate from 20 to 21. And they think they have enough moving parts here. They're going to strip the individual mandate out of Obamacare so they get, you know, a win for the base there. And Trump finally gets a legislative victory.
So you think it's going to go through?
Yes. And talking to Republicans, they desperately need this win. But when you talk to Democrats, they're like, yeah, we get that they need a political win because they have a president who hasn't done anything for a year almost.
I want to ask you about that. I want to talk about that for a second, because it, to me, look, I understand that all administrations are judged by the legislation that they accomplish while they're in office. But it seems to me that in the media that the coverage of this has focus so much on the win that the nuts and bolts of the legislation kind of get lost in the shuffle. And I've never heard it quite so much as I have during these recent months, where they talk about they need a win, they've got to get it passed, they've got to. And to me, when you've got all that hype surrounding just getting a legislative victory, the actual merits of the legislation itself get thrown to the side. And I don't think that's healthy. Have you ever been in a time where you remember where it was the win being this? And maybe it's because of Trump. He's always about, you'll get so tired of winning. It's winning, winning, winning. And I feel as though that's just not healthy right now, because it's not all about the win. It's about whether this legislation is going to help people or not, isn't it?
It's beautiful, Mike.
What do you mean it's beautiful?
That touches my heart.
Isn't it about
whether it's going to help people or not?
It's about politics.
That's what it's about.
You never heard this much commentary about the win.
Here's why. Because every other president before Donald Trump had a win before August. They did something huge and impactful, whether that was George W. Bush with his tax cuts that they got through right before September 11th, whether that was Barack Obama and the Recovery Act that he got through to pull the nation out of the recession, the bailout of all the banks and trying to steady the economy. He did that before the first year was over. You look down the line and you can point to a major legislative milestone and here's why it matters, Mike, because in that first year, you are at the peak of your political capital, the peak of your political powers. You only have so much time before other things start to intrude on your agenda. And the frustration that Republicans have with Trump is he was intruding on his own agenda. He was constantly tripping over himself. Because of all the tweets and all the sideshows and all of those things. So he hurt himself, and he's running out of time to have a big win. That's why everybody's focused on the win. But where I was going to go before you asked this very astute question was Democrats are saying, it's great, get your political win, because we think on policy, we're going to kick your butt on this. We think it's bad for the middle class. We are objecting to the way this is being done. We don't think that this is a win for most families. And if you look at the bill, you know, you have permanent tax cuts for corporations and temporary tax cuts for individuals. The tax cuts that passed under George W. Bush were about $800 per family. Once they were polled, a lot of people said, oh, I didn't feel a tax cut. We had a tax cut. So then the question is, do people even feel this tax cut that is being blown up as a big deal? Democrats think they can win on that because, to your point, they don't think the policy works. Now, Republicans will tell you, give tax cuts to businesses, that powers the economy, we're going to have more jobs, we're going to have more earning. But that's going to be the debate, and they're pushing it through because they run everything, Mike, and they don't need to talk to Democrats about this. They can just get it done on their own.
I have to say, getting back, and I'm going to do something I know you hate me to do. I want you to put your you know, when I try to get you to psychoanalyze the president, I know you say I'm not a psychologist, I can't do that. But getting back to the Alabama Senate race, one does have to talk about the president who jumped in at the end, made the robocalls, did the rally in Pensacola, Florida, where, you know, he was talking about Judge Roy Moore. And there was a lot of talk about his involvement. Most people are indicating that his endorsement did switch some votes, that did help more in the end. But I want to talk about, and I know it's hard to do, the president's motivation. There's a lot of talk about, you know, does he, why did he do this? Well, I really believe, I'm not in his brain, I don't know, but I really do believe that ultimately Donald Trump is not going to jump into a race unless he thinks he's going to grab the win, because he knows that if he gets the win and if Roy Moore wins the Senate race, it's going to reflect well on him. That didn't happen again. And then he backpedals and he goes in another direction. So the question to you is, I think that's what motivates him. I don't think there's anything else going on other than he jumps into that race at the end and he sticks with it because he thinks that the Alabama voters are going to vote. And I really do believe he thought they were going to vote significantly for Judge Roy Moore. And it was a miscalculation. And then we can maybe talk about Steve Bannon. But I think that's why he jumps into this. It has nothing to do with policy. It has everything to do with the fact that he wants the win. I'll go so far as even to say contradict the president when he said, if Roy Moore does not get elected, it will stop our agenda and it will going forward. I don't think he thinks about that. I think he wants to high five his buddies and go, yeah, I picked him. He's a winner. I'm a winner. That's what it's all about. And he's not winning.
Every president wants their team to win. Absolutely.
Right.
And when you look at what Trump did, he went with Mitch McConnell in that primary. He went with Luther Strange. They were trying to clear a path for him. He was a much more moderate Republican candidate. Trump got behind him, even though he kind of gave one of those half endorsements where he's like, I don't know, he seems kind of low energy, you know, while he's like up there at a campaign praising him, which, you know, is the mixed message of Donald Trump. But he did get behind Strange. Then he was pissed, right? He was like, you know, you guys gave me bad advice. He lost. Now we got Roy Moore. And Roy
Moore just wants the win. He wants the win in Alabama.
Well, Roy Moore was, you know, he thought, well, okay, Moore is probably going to win, so that's fine. And then all of the allegations came out. So there's two things that are happening if you look at the reporting on this, right? Like, one of those things is he's getting asked about it. He's over in Asia. He doesn't really want to talk about, like, sexual assault. But then you see some reporting where he starts to sympathize with Roy Moore. He came under attack. People bailed on him, right? Okay. Like, there were people,
I agree.
Mike Pence was, like, sizing up the Oval Office and basically telling people, hey, you know, if you need me to step in here, I'm ready to run for president. God has a plan. And so, mother. And so he I think he also felt for Roy Moore having been in that kind of place. And he also wants a win for the Republicans. And, you know, there's a bunch of them saying he shouldn't serve. And he understands that, yeah, maybe I can move the needle here. Maybe I can get a win. And Bannon, to your point, tells him the polling's good.
Yeah.
The polling's good.
We're going to get it, Mr. President.
We're going to get it.
You
can help reflected glory. He knows he's a Trump whisperer. He, to your point, we're going to get the win.
We're going to get the win.
You want in on this, don't you?
We're going to get the win. Even though it's a flawed candidate, we're going to get the win.
We're going to get the win. And he said as much when he said, like, look, man, I'm a Republican. I want more Republicans. That's where it is. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And he was a little more magnanimous than I would have imagined in his tweet. Congratulating Doug Jones, saying, you know, essentially,
he's gotten better at that.
He won. He's a senator.
He's gotten better at being great, at pretending to be gracious, a gracious person.
Well,
he's gotten a little better at that.
It was surprising to me that he took that tact, and I was like, oh, well, maybe he's learning. Maybe
Melania, I'm going to send out a tweet that's going to appear to be gracious. That's it. Look, I agree with everything you said, and I think that ultimately you have Republicans and Democrats discussing the fact that this particular individual was not the greatest candidate. Chris brought us a piece of tape, made us aware of this. Rob had it on Rob Spiewak had it on the Mike O'Mara show this week. This is indicative of the quality of people around Judge Roy Moore. I give you Mr. Ted Crockett, and I know you wanted us to play this piece of tape this week with Jake Tapper.
I do, and I just want to say for our listeners who don't know who Ted Crockett is, he was Roy Moore's campaign spokesman, being interviewed on the eve of the election. This was Tuesday night by Jake Tapper. Here it is.
Judge Moore has also said that he doesn't think a Muslim member of Congress should be allowed to be in Congress. Why? Under what provision of the Constitution?
Because you have to swear on the Bible. When you are before, I had to do it. I'm an elected official, three terms. I had to swear on a Bible. You have to swear on a Bible to be an elected official in the United States of America. He alleges that a Muslim cannot do that ethically, swearing on the Bible.
You don't actually have to swear on a Christian Bible. You can swear on anything, really.
Thanks,
I don't know if you knew that. You can swear on a Jewish Bible.
Oh, no, I swore on the Bible. I've done it three times.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you've picked a Bible, but the law is not that you have to swear on a Christian Bible. That is not the law.
1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000.
You don't know that? All right, Ted Crockett. With
I don't know. I know that Donald Trump did it when we made him president.
Because he's Christian and he picked it. That's what he wanted to. That's what he wanted to swear in on. Ted Crockett with the Moore campaign. Good luck tonight. Thank you so much for being here.
And just stunning.
The only thing you miss in audio here is like Ted Crockett with his mouth open, just looking at the camera.
Amazing.
You counted how many hundredths of a second, right? How many,
yeah.
And it's just
yeah.
like.
I mean, it's truly, and that is the spokesperson, right? For Roy Moore.
That was his campaign spokesperson. And it just blew my mind. You know, I knew he had a lot of these kind of insane views, but that it would be unethical to swear in on a Bible. I can tell you that Keith Ellison, the only sitting member of Congress who's a Muslim from Minnesota, well, he swore in on a Quran because that is
and
his
that's
book
the
of
law.
Faith.
And you know, really, I was not even aware of that law myself, but I never really occupied my time thinking about what they're putting their hand on. You know, you assume it's that way, but obviously there's some people that spend a lot of time thinking about what the book is, what the magic book is that they're going to put their hand on when they're being sworn in. And it really is, not only is that a great piece of tape to demonstrate the ignorance of people in the Roy Moore camp, but I think it's also educational for the rest of the country that, yes, if you happen to come from a different religious background, you can use the holy book of whatever religion you are part of. I think I didn't know that until I saw
which is why Tapper was like, so where in the Constitution is it that like a Muslim can't serve? Because that's what guides our country, not what book you get sworn in on. So I just
and Steve Bannon, if he ever gets elected, I believe he'll put his right hand on a case of Maker's Mark. I mean, that's what it looks like to me. Look, I don't know. You know, I don't know whether Steve drinks or not. I don't know what Steve does in his personal life, but I will tell you, I want to ask you about Mr. Steve Bannon, who was such a huge face of this Roy Moore Senate campaign, especially at the end. And there are a lot of people wondering now where he goes from here. Obviously, he's still at Breitbart. Will he still be a significant force in the far right end of the Republican Party? And do you see his stock diminishing after this? I mean, it's a pretty high-profile loss for this guy. And, you know, look, I don't want to keep this on appearance, but when you see Steve Bannon show up, and, you know, he looks sometimes like he came out of a refrigerator box, I think putting him out there, let's just say there's not a tremendous amount of charisma. Where do you see the whole Steve Bannon thing going on the far right of the Republican Party right now?
Well, look, I think he will continue to be a force in the far right. He still has the president's ear based on all reporting. You talked to him a couple days after the election for 15 minutes. He's a guy who still has tremendous influence. And remember, there is no failure in politics that cannot be spun, Mike. And what you see right now is the Bannon camp saying, hey, look, man, this is all Mitch McConnell. He'd rather have a Democrat, a nasty Democrat, than a solid rock rib Republican in there. And this is all McConnell for not getting behind Moore. Now, McConnell's people are like, you know, essentially, dude was accused of sexually assaulting children, like didn't belong in the Senate, would have been investigated, was terrible. And that's Bannon's fault for running Moore against Luther Strange, who was a much more moderate Republican. Screw Bannon. But I think he will continue. He continues to meet with candidates ahead of 2018. He was meeting with candidates in Colorado, in other states, and he's going to primary McConnell folks, and he might even start the primary incumbents because he wants to take out Mitch McConnell. I mean,
does he have the same kind of gravitas that he had prior to this defeat? Do you think that, because you hear about the primarying these different senators and congresspeople with farther right candidates, do you think that have they taken a step backwards with the election of Doug Jones?
No. I mean, I think the problem for McConnell is he was able to kind of rein in, you know, some of the more extreme candidates who were out there in primaries these last couple cycles after the witch in Delaware and the Indiana race where, you know, the candidate made some of the inopportune rape comments. You know, after that cycle, McConnell was able to clamp down on the party and make sure that those outliers didn't run. Steve Bannon continues to push those outliers into the mainstream, and he's going to continue to do that because he believes in his agenda, which is an American first, screw everybody else. We need to take back our country.
So you're saying they're not going to take a step backwards, Chris, but no. I'm going to say that I think when you lose in a state like Alabama, because you have the flawed candidate, and a lot of these far-right extremist candidates tend to step on it during an election campaign, I think it's going to be a very, very tough situation for these primary guys to come in there. I just don't think that maybe they're not going to take a step back, but I think this damages the brand of Steve Bannon and the far right. I think it has to because of the loss. They lost in a place where if they were going to win anywhere, they could win in Alabama.
But I think you're thinking like a liberal, and I think you're wrong. So,
I am thinking like a liberal, damn it. Because maybe I am a liberal. I mean, maybe I'm hopeful. Maybe this is
Half full. Yeah, you're being like, he's dead, right? I want to dance on his grave. He's not dead.
Yeah.
There are so many wingnuts running for Senate.
I don't want that to happen.
Because you're not seeing any of the Mercers or some of the billionaires who fund Steve Bannon and his causes stepping back and saying, you know what, he lost, we're not going to fund him. He continues to get funding, and he continues with this, and they can say, look, he was a flawed candidate. Not every, alt-right or far-right conservative who Steve Bannon tries to put up is going to be accused of sexually assaulting children. So, they're going to say it was the candidate. We didn't know about this, but he was, more conservative. I think it continues.
When you talk about Steve Bannon, you talk about the extreme wing. The one thing that I think we can agree on is that all politics can be dirty politics, but there has never been a time where I've been more aware of the fact that you never know how low some of these guys are going to go. It's pretty stunning to me, and it seems to be getting closer and closer to the gutter, and that's why you brought to my attention that USA Today article, that editorial.
I like your segue here, but I got to...
Okay.
I got to disagree. Like, the whole, it's never been dirtier. Like, it's always been dirty. I mean, they used to duel. I mean, there was a fight with a fireplace poker on the Senate floor. It's nasty stuff. Andrew Jackson's wife was driven into an early grave because of the attacks.
It's always been dirty.
It's always been dirty and nasty because that's why we love it.
Then let me throw this out at you because it does speak to the USA Today editorial when you say, yeah, I agree with you. Politics has always been dirty. You can go back historically and see it. Where I think there is a difference is once you attain the prize, once you make it to the top of the mountain, you can take more of the high ground. And when you're talking about the president and the tweets and what's going on right now, I think there, at least in modern history, there's never been an example of a person who's sitting in the White House going as low as he can go. And that's why, I don't know if you have it, I've got it right here with the USA Today editorial. They were pretty heavy on the president. They came down on him pretty hard.
They came down on him pretty hard, and this is not a New York Daily News or a New York Times editorial board. They're not nearly as liberal as those folks. They had a editorial this week with the headline, "Will Trump's Lows Ever Hit Rock Bottom?" And they're queuing off this tweet by Donald Trump. He was a number of female Democratic senators and some male senators as well are calling on Trump to resign as part of the Me Too movement, the way other men who have come under accusations of sexual assault and improper conduct have been called on to resign. So Trump responds this way on Twitter to Kristen Gillibrand, who is a senator from New York. He says, "Lightweight Senator Kristen Gillibrand, a total funky for Chuck Schumer, and someone who would come to my office begging for campaign contributions not so long ago and would do anything for them, is now in the ring fighting against Trump. Very disloyal to Bill and crooked. Used." USA Today takes a stand and says, essentially, "A president who'd all but call a senator a whore is unfit to clean toilets in Obama's presidential library or to shine George W. Bush's shoes."
So unprecedented when you read that from an editorial group like USA Today. That's like a dogfight. That's personal. Somebody was pissed over at USA Today.
And Sanders, got up in the White House podium basically and dismissed this as a smear. It was just a misunderstanding because he's used similar language about men. USA Today goes on to say, "Of course, words used about men and women are different. When candidate Trump said a journalist was bleeding from her wherever, He didn't mean her nose. And, of course, we're talking about the Megyn Kelly diss after the debate. So, I mean, this coarseness, I was just shocked at how tough of an editorial this was, against Donald Trump. And I think that is part of what Republicans are worried about, is that, you know, everything he touches coarsens, and that could be terrible for their brand. I mean,
it distracts from the legislation they're trying to get
through. It distracts from everything. And when you take a look at, you know, the fake news, there's a great story in the Times this week as well that talked about, you know, his attacks on the media, calling any reporting that he doesn't like, doesn't agree with, or is critical of him as fake news. It turns out strongmen across the world are taking their cues from Donald Trump, whether it's Duterte or Bashar al-Assad in Syria or Vladimir Putin. CNN did a fantastic story about human slave smuggling in Libya. The Libyans were basically like, oh, well, it's fake news, just like Donald Trump says. CNN is fake news, and so this is fake news. Don't worry about it. And when you say Donald Trump talks about America first and, you know, puts America first, an American president always has an influence on the world. And when the influence is to degrade journalism, which is just a foundational aspect of democracy, right, and empower dictators to use the kinds of tactics against the press that they always have, but then to be able to point to an American president as the example, I just think this is terrible, terrible for the state of journalism. It's terrible as the example that America is showing to the world. I have big problems with it, Mike.
You know, I watched the press briefings, Chris, and I will watch Sarah Huckabee Sanders in front of that room. And look, this is not unique to Democrats or Republicans that you have a contentious relationship between the press secretary and the press. It's happened for years and years on both sides of the aisle. But there is a noticeable almost look of disgust so often on the face of Sarah Sanders, where she's fielding questions and where she's going up against these reporters. It's just a weird time that we're living in right now. And when you talk about that, I think you cannot diminish the importance of what you just said when you're considering the fact that dictators like Bashar Assad around the world, strongmen, the most despicable type of people that oppress their people and violate their human rights, are taking cues from this president when the free press is a foundation of our democracy. It is, the mild way of saying it, we live in interesting times. The horrible way of saying this Cheeto-dipped, clueless individual, to me, is truly misguided in all of this. And I'm getting to the point now, because I really don't think that ultimately he's going to be driven out of office. I don't think so.
I don't think that's correct.
I don't think that's going to happen. What I would pray for, what I would really hope for, even with the fact that I'm a Democrat and he's a Republican, would be some semblance of decency and taking the high ground. And I don't see that for the next 3 years. I just don't see that happening.
And why would you think so? I mean, having covered him and spent dozens, scores of evenings at campaign rallies with Donald Trump, this whole notion that he was going to somehow pivot and become presidential. I will be so presidential. I don't do
right.
it. Your Trump's better than mine.
But I will be so presidential. You'll get tired of how presidential I will be.
Exactly.
Got to throw an impression in there sometimes, Chris.
That's absolutely. I want more of them. I like. Okay. Yes. I want you to get. You know what? I think we should do like some mock exchanges. You should just like get like your John McCain down and your Donald Trump.
I'd like
Trump.
To have Chris Freites removed. We're going to remove Chris Freites from the floor. Please get him out of here. Get him security. That's a get him out. Get him out of here right now. Go with your nice suit. Get out of here. Thank you. Thank you.
Fancy
very much.
Suit. Mm-hmm. I noticed that Dan O'Brien knows how to dress.
I want you to throw Chris Freites out of this floor, out of this campaign rally, faster than we threw Omarosa out just the other day when she got fired. That's by the way, that's the latest news of the day, that Omarosa was conflicting reports of course, coming out of this White House. She's screaming and scratching.
So my favorite tweet was that, you know, she was fired and removed, and then the official line was, oh, she's going to serve till January 20th, and sure. You know, 1 year. And then Maggie Haberman, a friend of mine, a Times reporter, tweets,
What did she say?
She's like, if she's going to serve until January 20th, why was her White House hard pass disconnected last night?
Like, explain what is a White House hard pass?
That is the pass that you use. It's a permanent pass. You need Secret Service background checks to get it. Journalists have it. Staffers have it. And essentially, it lets you into the building. It lets you into the White House without being on a visitor log, without, you know, having to ask anybody. So, but essentially, it was like when they come to you and escort you out the building at your job, and like your badge doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that's security.
Security. That's what happened.
What are you getting on this particular story, which is fresher than the Roy Moore election defeat? I will say, what are you hearing out of the White House? Was this someone? Did she really try to run to the living quarters in the White House? This is a story. They're pretty good at burying some of this stuff, so it'll eke out. But we're not getting any confirmations. And you know, since she's the reality TV star, I think a lot of people are fascinated with the
Omarosa
situation.
And I don't have any independent reporting. I have not made calls on Omarosa because I just frankly don't care that much. But
Come on, I care. That's the difference between you and me. I live for this stuff. Great. I want to see if does she have any DNA of under her fingernails from where she was scratching at the
at Donald
the
Trump
trying
don't
to
let
throw
me go. Don't throw me out. I know the president. I'm going to the living quarters. You can't stop me.
I'm running
service.
Upstairs. I'll scratch your eyes out. That's what I don't know. A lot of people. I know it's not germane to the day-to-day activities, but this is a woman who was prominent in his White House, and there was a lot of talk about really knew what she did.
Well,
right?
Prominent would be, I think, a misnomer here. She was essentially put into the Office of Public Liaison, which a lot of folks that they didn't know what to do with ended up in that office. It was you know, it's supposed to be outreach coalitions. She, you know, the reporting you're seeing drip out was she wasn't really doing her job. They did an event for Black History Month. She didn't bring enough people. She didn't have a big enough crowd. She didn't get enough people there. It's kind of been known as like the land of misfit toys, you know, the Office of Public Liaison. And that's, you know, she was kind of the queen of...
Welcome to the Presidential Liaison's Office. Nobody wants a Charlie in the box. Yes.
Yeah, you're banished to the island of misfit presidential liaison workers, Omarosa.
She's going to be a dentist is what's going to happen next.
I'm going to be a dentist. That's right.
It was, you know, more evidence, though, that there's quite the clown college going over on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I mean, it really, really is. And look, we can laugh about it, but it also is a little bit scary. It really, the whole thing, I think there's a national stress level that's off the charts right now.
I think you're right. Really, and getting back to that USA Today piece, right? One of the things that they said about why,
them.
You know, 60% of the 1,200 appointments he needs to make remain unopened.
He's not doing his job.
Yeah, so he's not filling the positions that run the government. And when I talk to people, you know, in different, you know, around the world who usually talk to our State Department, they say, like, you know, Freitas, I don't know who to call. Like, there's nobody answering the phone, right? And so, because it's one of those things where there's just the infrastructure of state. And Donald Trump set this up for himself because it's all about loyalty, right? So if you were against Donald Trump in the primaries, now remember, there were 17 Republican candidates at some point. So pretty much the whole Republican, you know, party was split among all these different candidates. It's pretty, you know, you kind of get behind the nominee at some point. But Donald Trump was different, right?
And I know them all, incidentally. I know all 17. You've got Ted Cruz. You've got John Kasich. You've got John Stamos. You've got Scott Baio. You've got, who was the guy that, who was Potsy from Happy Day? No, I'm sorry. There were a lot of different, there were a lot of candidates.
So a lot of those folks who were Rubio or Ted Cruz or other supporters who spoke out against Donald Trump, they're persona non grata, which leaves him with a very small pool of people who can do the job and who are qualified.
Yeah, and now that Omarosa's gone, oh my God!
I don't know how the place is going to function.
What did you see?
She did like a bridal shoot, and she like brought in her bridal party to the White House, and it was
abuse of power.
And it was like, and his Secret Service was like, you got to take that down. Like that, you can't put the white, like that's secure areas. Like you don't get to do your bridal shoot on the White House grounds. And so she made some missteps.
You know, it seems to me that even with the potential for a legislative victory with the tax bill, that this goat show is going to continue even with legislative victories. You know,
I mean, what's a goat? What's a goat sound like?
Lamb, I don't know. I only do human impressions. No, I do animals too.
I want your I want your goat animals. Boy President Trump impression.
Goat boy President Trump. This was the best rally in the world. Look at all the people on the mall. I had the biggest crowd in the history of presidential inaugurations. Donald Trump as a goat. It's going to continue.
That's the kind of in-depth analysis you get here on Political Persuasions.
That's it. I couldn't say it better myself. And that wraps up another edition of Presidential Persuasion Impressions this week. No, it's Political Persuasions with Chris Freitz and Mike O'Mara. Next week, we can dive deep into the special counsel if nothing happens in between them, Chris, because every week this president is doing something, isn't he?
He's doing something, and as always, you can holler at me on Twitter, ask me questions. No, I'm disappointed. No questions this week. Although,
let me jump in here. All right, Chris will take all of your questions because he knows how to answer them. I will just yell at you and I will scream like I do. But you want to get some people that are going to be submitting questions to you, am I right?
Holler at me, at Freitz, tell me what you want. And in the spirit of Donald Trump, we did get a lot of praise, so I'll read some of that. We got Elfinista at LA Vacationista. Loving Freitz and Mike O'Mara, Political Persuasions Podcast. Freitz brings the pragmatism. Mike brings the heart. Great team.
Yeah!
You bring the heart, baby. And then
the heart. And
on a serious note, John Steinman, a buddy of mine, emailed to say, you know, I really like the show, and I like that you guys keep it clean because it allows me to talk about these events with my kids. And I didn't realize how many parents are using podcasts and news to talk about things with their kids. So maybe we're doing a little of the Lord's work here, Mike.
I'm enjoying every minute of it, Chris, and you know that. And we'll have another one for you next week. And really, reach out to Chris. He'd love to answer your questions. And join us next week for another episode of Political Persuasions on the More Network. Thank you, Chris Freitz. I appreciate that. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to another episode of Political Persuasions. If you have a comment or question for Political Persuasions, they can be sent to @Freitz on Twitter. That's FRATES.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.